Going Linux, episode 217, Cross-Platform Software for Editing Web Pages. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux. We hope that you will find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, editing web pages with cross-platform software. Well, I know in our last episode, Bill and I said that we would be discussing open source licensing. Well, Bill is off, and until Bill is available, we've deferred that episode, so you won't have to wait too long. In this episode, instead, we will be discussing something that I have recently experienced personally, and that is a switch in software for creating the Going Linux website. You may have noticed that there has been a redesign of our website at goinglinux.com, and it is hopefully cleaner, and it certainly has a more modern aesthetic to it. It looks more modern, and it's using more modern technology in the back end, as well as it's easier for me to maintain. I've often admired the look and feel of blogging software and wanted to get something similar to that for our website at Going Linux, but I didn't want the restrictions of blogging software. I wanted to be able to edit my own RSS feed, for example. Yeah, I'm a bit of a control freak that way, and I wanted to be able to edit the CSS and the HTML behind the web pages myself as well. Although I wanted some automation for actually creating those pages so that I didn't have to type every character of HTML on my own from my keyboard. I wanted also to have the software installed on my hardware so that I wasn't relying on a connection to the cloud to be able to edit web pages. I wanted to be able to do that offline. So today we'll discuss some of the decision points that I used in selecting our own software here at Going Linux for creating our web pages. And hopefully that whole exercise of making that decision will help you in deciding what you need for an HTML editor on your own. So my search for a replacement HTML editor to replace the Composer HTML editor that we've been using for a large number of years first led me to a top 10 reviews website, and we'll have a link to that top 10 reviews website in the show notes, although it really, for us open source software users, really it doesn't have a lot for us, quite frankly. In that top 10 reviews site, nothing is free or open source. It appears that everything there is proprietary, and I much prefer the try before you buy philosophy of open source software, and then I will contribute to the project if I feel that I'm getting some benefit out of the software and that they deserve it. So I'll contribute either through code if I can do that, which is very rare, but also financially. I'll contribute money by donating or paying for the software if they have a way to do that, or I'll provide them with some advertising publicity and some visibility here on the Going Linux podcast to get some exposure for their software, which is what we'll be doing here for a couple of these HTML editors that are available. So let's start at the beginning. Back in 2006, when I was first putting together the Going Linux podcast, actually before that, for my other website, now defunct, I was using an HTML editor that I had actually found through some similar research to what I've been doing recently, which is to look for some free and open source, although at the time I was originally looking for this, I'm not sure that I really realized what open source was, but it was around that time that I begin to gain some awareness about free and open source software. So that's where I was gravitating towards. And I first found something called SeaMonkey. And SeaMonkey had a very full suite of products that included an HTML editor called Composer, C-O-M-P-O-S-E-R. It's still available. And I found, though, that SeaMonkey had a browser and a bunch of other stuff that I didn't really need. And I was looking just for the software that would allow me to create a web page and edit a web page and maintain the website for the podcast. So looking at SeaMonkey and looking at where it came from, because I really liked the features of the Composer application, I found that it originated back in the Netscape days, and Netscape had a component called Composer as well. And from there, I was led to something called NView, which is spelled lowercase n, capital V, and lowercase u. So NView took the Composer software and actually provided it as its own separate application, exactly what I was looking for. And I used that for quite a long time until it became unsupported, and I began to look for something as an alternative for that. And I'm not sure whether this forked out of NView or NView forked out of this or whatever, but there was another HTML editor of a similar vein called Composer. This one spelled K-O-M-P-O-Z-E-R. And I ran across this in the days when I was using KDE as my desktop environment, and I believe that it actually was available in an Ubuntu repository or an OpenSUSE repository, because that was about the time I was using one or the other or both of those distributions using the KDE desktop. So Composer, very, very similar to NView. And in fact, using the two, you wouldn't really tell the difference between the two. And I used Composer for a very large number of years to maintain the Going Linux website, and it served us very, very well. What I found recently is that Composer is no longer supported. So I began my search for something to replace Composer probably a year or so ago. Now, I have recently, very recently, discovered something called Blue Griffin, and I'll describe how I discovered that in a moment. But Blue Griffin takes the attitude and the features of Composer and continues along with its design and is currently actively supported. And for most of you looking for a web page editor that is currently supported, fully featured, and provides a lot of control over what you want, Blue Griffin is probably not bad at all. And in this case, Griffin is spelled G-R-I-F-F-O-N. So B-L-U-E-G-R-I-F-F-O-N, all one word, if you're looking for it on the internet. And the reason I say that is there are probably four or five different ways to spell the name of the mythical creature called Griffin. And when I first searched for it, I was spelling it G-R-Y-P-H-O-N, because that's the way we spelled it in my university. The griffin was our mascot, so that's the way we spelled it. It's not spelled that way when we're talking about the HTML editor. But now let's spend a moment and get into this decision process that I used for determining what was going to replace Composer as our HTML editor for our website at Going Linux, and which eventually led us to the web pages that you now see redesigned on our website at goinglinux.com. All right. First of all, in this decision process was the fact that we needed a replacement web authoring tool. And your requirements will certainly vary from mine, but I'm going to go through what my requirements were and the criteria we used for making the decision. So first, the must-have criteria. I wanted to have something that was not blogging software. Although I admired the clean lines of the results of blog software on the web pages that it created. And although blogging software might be the best solution for novice podcasters and novice bloggers as well, it is something that didn't give me the amount of control and provided some roadblocks to some of the things that I wanted to do with the website and was currently doing with the website using our current HTML editor. So the first criterion, no blogging software. Now, the second criterion was that the software must be cross-platform. Yes, I am influenced by Nightwise. I want something that allows me to slide between Linux, Mac, and Windows. And although I don't use Mac currently, I do use Windows at work, and I wanted to be able to use whatever software we have from whatever platform I wanted to use. And the ones that I currently use are Linux and Windows, and I'm contemplating using the Mac OS X operating system a bit in the future to begin to learn what that's all about and to expand my knowledge a bit, and perhaps even BSD in the future. Although a requirement to be able to run on BSD almost falls out of the ability to run on Linux, but not always the case. And it's not really something that I included in my decision criteria at this point. That may change in the future. The third criterion is that the software needs to be able to give me full control to edit the CSS and the HTML code on each page. So I don't want something that takes control and doesn't allow me to make my own changes. I want to be able to edit, hand code, if you will, the HTML and the CSS if need be. So that's criterion number three. Number four, it needs to be free of charge, at least initially. And so, as I said earlier, I like the open source model where you can try before you buy. And then if you like what you see, you can contribute financially or in other ways to the project. And of course, that is criterion number four. Number five, it needs to be open source. So even though it is free of charge, there are free of charge software applications out there that are not open source, but I wanted to ensure that what we were talking about on our Going Linux podcast and used to support the Going Linux website. So that's why criterion number five is open source. Number six, not cloud only. It needs to be some software that can be installed on my computer, on my Linux or Windows computer, and possibly on Mac OS X. And so it would be something that gives me the control and the ability to edit web pages without having a connection to the internet. And although it's installed, I don't mind compiling the software, so it doesn't necessarily have to be available on Linux in the repositories. Although that might be a condition that would be important to you, that it would be installable without having to compile it. That's up to you and up to your own personal preferences. For me, I don't mind compiling. The next criterion is that it needs to be currently supported and actively developed. Now, not so much actively developed as currently supported. So it needs to be current, it needs to be modern, it needs to be currently in use. I need to be assured that if new features come out for HTML5 or CSS, that the application that I'm using to maintain the website will adapt to those requirements going forward. That's what we're looking for in that criterion. Next, it needs to support CSS. And my very last must-have criterion on my list, it must support HTML5. This is the direction of the future, although HTML4 is still probably the standard for most websites that are out there. I want to take advantage of the features that HTML5 offers, particularly around embedded media. Since this is an audio podcast, that applies to embedding our players on the website and as well video going forward. Although HTML5 video support has a long way to go, I want to make sure that we can take advantage of that as it improves over time. Our first optional criterion is that I wanted a web editor that led me toward content management as opposed to simply HTML editing. This comes out of the fact that I have been hand coding the HTML site for Going Linux for quite some years, and the design showed that it was a 1990s or early 2000s design we were using. So I wanted to have something that allowed us to maintain the website a little more easily, and I thought that something that was more along the lines of a content management system without being blogging software would give us that kind of capability. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a full-fledged content management system, but it needs to lead me towards using that kind of capability. And when I say lead me towards it, I'm looking to learn how to use it. And as I've been using Composer over the years and its predecessors, I've learned a lot about HTML and CSS by doing. And that's one of the ways that I like to learn. And so I want to learn about content management by doing and without having to be an expert in it right up front. Now, I had two other optional criteria. WYSIWYG. Some of you may not be familiar with that term. It's spelled WYSIWYG, and it's an acronym that stands for What You See Is What You Get. And in the early 90s, this was a very, very popular term because we were moving from text-based operating systems to a graphical user interface, and What You See Is What You Get was the buzzword at the time for moving from text to moving to graphics for what you want to do in a word processor, in presentation software, in spreadsheets, and in web page design. So WYSIWYG, essentially, when it comes to web design, is a feature that allows you to simply type on a page the content that you want to use for your web page, highlight the text that you want to make bold, make it bold, much like the way you would use a word processor, and then go to the source code and edit that for what it is you're trying to accomplish on the page itself. So that's what WYSIWYG is all about. That's an optional criterion. The software that I select didn't need to have a WYSIWYG editor, but it needed, of course, to have some way of previewing the web page before you actually publish it to the website. And everything that we've looked at in our list actually had that criterion. So optional, WYSIWYG. And last optional criterion, an FTP uploader. Some of the web page editors have a built-in FTP uploader, and some have it as a plugin. But what an FTP uploader allows you to do is to, right from within the application itself, publish your web pages to your website using FTP to upload it without having to leave, and use a different FTP application for the upload. Not absolutely critical, because I'm quite familiar and comfortable using FTP software, but it's a nice to have, so it was on my optional criteria list. All right, so I mentioned that one of the web pages that I originally looked at was one that was a top 10 reviews site, and it wasn't much help. So turning to Wikipedia, which is always of a lot of help, I came across a comparison of HTML editors right there on Wikipedia. We'll have a link to that in the show notes, of course. And going down the list, I eliminated anything that had the word proprietary next to it, which certainly shortened the list substantially. After eliminating all of the proprietary software, we were left with these: Amaya, Aptana, Arachnophilia, Bluefish, Blue Griffin, Composer, Magenta, I think is how you would pronounce that, Magenta, OpenOffice.org, and SeaMonkey Composer. Now, I added to the list of comparison LibreOffice, since that's what's installed in my Linux distribution of choice. And it's similar enough to OpenOffice.org that the features and comparison listed in Wikipedia would apply to both LibreOffice and OpenOffice. And something that I was exposed to for the very first time from Floss Weekly, some software called The Maker. We'll have a little discussion about that in a little more depth in a few minutes as well. All right, so in reviewing what was on Wikipedia for these and identifying what I knew about LibreOffice and The Maker from what was described in the Floss Weekly podcast, I eliminated quite a few of these. First, Amaya. It only has partial support for CSS and no support for HTML5, so it was off the list. Aptana, no support for FTP upload or WYSIWYG, but those were on my optional criteria. So it was a possibility as well, but it doesn't support HTML5, so it's out. Arachnophilia, it supports everything that's on my must-have list. Didn't have WYSIWYG or FTP uploader, so it's a possibility. Same thing with Bluefish. I've tried Bluefish, wasn't really too happy with it, but I left it on the possibilities list. All right, according to Wikipedia, Blue Griffin, open source. Although the application itself is free, the add-ons are paid, and the add-on for FTP upload is also included in that paid list. It's not built in, but it is a WYSIWYG editor. It does have CSS support and HTML5 support, and so it's on our list. Composer, well, it's the one that we wanted to replace, so it's off the list simply because of that, but the main reason it's no longer on the list is it is not currently supported, and it's not supporting of HTML5, so it would be off the list for those technical reasons as well. Let's skip down to Magetta. It meets all of the criteria except that for the Linux client, it's cloud-based only. So it's out. And now SeaMonkey, we'll skip down to it. The Composer application for SeaMonkey is not supporting HTML5, so it's out as well. Now let's get to LibreOffice and OpenOffice.org. These really are office suites. So what are they doing in the HTML editor category here? Well, these are almost by definition WYSIWYG editors for HTML. The word processor in these office suites can save the file in HTML format. And unlike the word processor in their Microsoft counterpart, they do not add a whole lot of customized code to support Microsoft's non-standard web formatting to your HTML. OpenOffice.org and LibreOffice do not add those additional tags into your HTML and mess it up. I have had more trouble with people adding to our web pages at work using Microsoft's Office suite to create HTML pages, and then them not working with Firefox browser or the Chrome browser or other browsers other than Internet Explorer. And that's one of the first things that I looked at with LibreOffice and OpenOffice.org as possible candidates for our website editor. And they do not appear to add those customized tags or any sort of customized tags into your web page using their word processor. However, as you can see, if you're looking at the Wikipedia page, LibreOffice and OpenOffice.org, there's a question mark as to whether or not they support HTML5, and there's a question mark as to whether or not they have FTP upload as something that's directly in the Office suite or in the word processor itself. So, although they were a possibility, they stayed on my possibility list, I thought that they would be eliminated if they ended up not supporting HTML5 in the end. So for now, let's just leave them on the possibilities list. All right, the one that we haven't talked about is The Maker. So the Maker is some open source software that is cross-platform. They have it available for the Mac, for Linux, and for Windows, although their development is primarily for the Mac, and their most current version is the OS X version. The Windows versions and the Linux versions are quite functional, and the Linux version in particular is free, and all of the versions are free if you compile them, so they meet that criteria. The Maker is not a WYSIWYG editor, but that's an optional criterion, so that doesn't rule it out. It has an FTP uploader built in, supports CSS, and HTML5. It is currently actively developed, although, as I said, it's primarily developed for OS X, and they have some lagging versions for Windows and Linux, but completely functional. And so it meets all of the must-have criteria and misses out only on the optional WYSIWYG criterion. So we are down to a few. So actually trying some of these, I didn't like Arachnophilia. Bluefish I eliminated mainly because Blue Griffin was so similar to Composer and gave me exactly what I wanted as a replacement, a drop-in replacement for Composer with a WYSIWYG editor, an FTP uploader, HTML5 support, and CSS added in there, that to go with something like Bluefish, which essentially removed the WYSIWYG editor and the FTP upload, it didn't make a lot of sense to retain it on the list. I finally eliminated LibreOffice and OpenOffice.org primarily because there were better options available. And the final list, the final two, were Blue Griffin and the Maker. Now, Blue Griffin, I ran across, I promised you I would tell you how I came to know about Blue Griffin. I was completely unaware that Blue Griffin existed until I watched the Cyber Librarian episode on Nightwise's video blog, a guest episode from the Cyber Librarian, where he talked about his cross-platform sliding at work. And as a librarian, one of the things that he did was use an HTML editor that was cross-platform, Windows, Linux, and Mac, so that he could develop on any of the platforms he wanted and test not only various browsers, but also operating systems that library patrons might use. And so in that discussion, he described Blue Griffin. I didn't really get a sense of Blue Griffin from what he described, but I had never heard of it before. So I went to their website and took a look and was pleasantly surprised to find that it is a drop-in replacement for Composer. It's actively developed, open source, and met all of the must-have criteria on my list. So definitely a contender for our replacement for Composer. Now the final decision. How did I make the final decision? Well, the one criterion we haven't talked about is the optional criterion of a content management system. And this was a very hard choice because the Maker is a content management system, or at least it advertises itself as a content management system. And it is the kind of thing that I was looking for in a web development tool that would allow me to learn about CMS as I was using the tool itself. So in the end, it was the deciding factor, that optional criterion for being a CMS system. Blue Griffin was not. It was simply an HTML editor, although it has a lot of features and many features that the Maker does not have. They weren't on my decision criteria, so I didn't consider them. And even though the Maker is not WYSIWYG and Blue Griffin is, that optional criterion was not as high on my list in the end as the content management system capabilities was. So in the end, between the two, Blue Griffin and the Maker, it turns out that the decision came down on in favor of the Maker. And it may be that in the future, we go back to something like Blue Griffin as they learn more about how CMS works and how I can use it in my day-to-day maintenance of the Going Linux website. It may be that I can have that capability with something like Blue Griffin and take advantage of the fact that it has some additional features that perhaps the Maker doesn't. But it is something that for now, the Maker has over Blue Griffin, at least for me. So now let's describe a little bit about the Maker. You'll find on the Going Linux homepage, the show notes page, the about page, our main pages, at the bottom of the page, there is a button that the Maker makes it very easy to add, that takes you to the website for the Maker. And that website is www.makercms, as in content management system.org. Now, I mentioned that the application is free of charge, and you'll see right on their page as I'm recording this, their main page, it says regular price $19.99, available at the Mac App Store, and now they have a summer sale on, 50% off, $9.99. So you may be saying to yourself, Larry, what are you talking about? This is a paid application. If you scroll to the bottom of the page, you'll see right above the little button that says available on the Mac App Store, it says, do you need a free copy? Click on that, and you'll see that the authors of the Maker are providing a free copy if you can't afford or don't want to pay for the software. If you want to try before you buy, you can actually get a free copy from them. And with the Linux software, quite frankly, you need to install it by compiling from source. So if that for you is one of the criteria that excludes an HTML editor is the fact that you'd have to compile it, then the Maker is not for you, for sure. But for Linux, Mac, and Windows, if you're willing to compile the software yourself, you can download it and compile it yourself for free from their website. And that is one way to get it for free. Another is to send a request using this Our Gift to You page, as it appears on the Maker website. That will allow you to try before you buy. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying it. And so far, I like it a lot. So once you've compiled it on Linux, and this is a Linux podcast, so we're going to talk about the Linux version of the Maker just for a few minutes to give you an idea of what it is and how it works. So the Maker itself, the user interface is graphical for sure, but it is very HTML heavy. You can acquire templates for the application, and that's one of its strengths. It provides you with CSS support out of the box in these templates. There are a small number of templates available to choose from, but very functional with a lot of different features in each of the templates. And you'll find more about those templates and how to get to them from within the application itself, as well as from their website. So I'm not going to go into the details here. If you're interested in the Maker, you can look for that yourself. So essentially, you create a new file, and that provides you with the body of the web page. It doesn't have any navigation. It doesn't have a footer. You're dealing with the body, the content of your web application. And this is where the content management piece comes in. When you create a new page, it pulls in the header and the footer from the basic definitions that are the part of the template that you've decided to use. Now, you have full control to edit the header and the footer and even the CSS. And you'll see on the left-hand side in the navigation pane that there are sections or folders. They appear as folders that contain the files around the CSS, the JavaScript, the navigation header, the body, the footer and the header itself. Although the header, you need to get into a little different way than navigating through the folders on the left-hand side. It becomes a little bit obscure after a while, especially if you decide to look at the header after you've done all of this other stuff, as I did. You'll find it a little bit counterintuitive that you have to go to Tools with one of the content pages open and click Edit the .head file to be able to edit the header for that particular page. So the maker actually maintains a template for the header file and pulls in that header for each of the content pages you have, but allows you to edit each page's header independently. And where that becomes important is in the title of your page. That actually appears in the header for the page. And so you may want to change the title in the header. And so by going to the Tools menu in the Maker, you can go in there and edit the title for that particular header file for that content page. One nice thing about having these pages organized the way they are in the Maker is that they are maintained separately from one another, so your content is maintained separately from your navigation, and it's maintained separately from the body, and it's maintained separately from the footer, and so on. So you can quite clearly see where you are and maintain your content independently of everything else. So if your navigation isn't changing, your headers aren't changing, you don't have to look at those. You don't have to navigate past those to get to your content. And the first time you create a new content page, you literally have a blank page to work with. And you can begin typing your content and adding your tags and adding your attachments and adding your links and so on as you create those content pages. All right. Let's say you've picked a template, you've created your header, you've created some content, and now you want to publish your page or pages to your website. Well, within the Maker, there is an FTP menu that allows you to set up your FTP connection. So you give it the particulars around your website's FTP connection, and the Maker automatically makes those connections and gives you the ability to upload all of your images from wherever they are in the Maker Project folder and put them in an Images folder. Now, they provide you with a default folder. And since I'm coming from the perspective for the Going Linux podcast of editing an existing website, the name of my Images folder was actually Images as opposed to GFX, which is what they were using in the Maker. So they give you in the Maker a menu selection under FTP called Edit Distribution Table. And when you go in there, there is the local file, which is the file with the name as it appears in the Maker Project folder. And it gives you the ability to tell the Maker which directory to put that file in. Each file independently, file by file, it allows you to change where that goes on your website. And so I have told it to put the articles in our articles folder, to put the home or the index page on the root directory, and so on. And in addition, you can change the name of the remote file. So for example, the Maker automatically creates pages tagged with the language that you're using. So by default, the index page for me is labeled index_en for English .htm. And on the remote website, I wanted to ensure that we don't break any links for people who have linked to our website. And on our website, the show notes page has been called shownotes.html. So the Maker gives you a remote file list for every file that allows you to say that the shownotes_en.htm file that the Maker has created should appear in the root directory on the website, and it should be called on the website not shownotes_en.htm, but rather shownotes.html. .html. So you have full control as to what page you've created in the Maker is called, where it goes on your website, and that's what I like. Okay, with that in mind, we have converted a number of our web pages. Certainly the most recent articles that we have, the show notes page, the about page, the home page, the articles pages, several of the most recent articles and the articles and other pages that they link to. But some of our older articles and some of our older content will actually still retain the old web style until we've had time to go in and make changes to those. So you may see for a period of time, some of the older pages still appear when you click through some of the links from our web page. And if you have a website of your own where you have linked to pages on the Going Linux podcast, some of the article page names have changed. Some of the deep links may have changed. So if you've deep linked into our website, some of the permalinks may have changed. We have an error page now, a 404 error page that will appear from whatever folder you're in. If you link to a page that its name has changed or it no longer exists, then this error page will come up, this 404 page will come up, describing some options that you may have, but the navigation on this page allows you to click directly to the show notes or the home page or the articles page or the about page, and it will give you as well within the body of the page the idea that this may be an opportunity to repair some links that may be broken as a result of our web page redesign. I have to apologize that that is the case, but in order to make this transition, some of our pages had to change. Our main pages have not, as I said, like the index, the home page, the subscribe page, our show notes, the articles, about page, and so on. All of those still are completely functional, and we've tried to provide an error page that provides you with some help as opposed to just saying this page no longer exists. So that wraps up our review of how we came to our decision to select a particular cross-platform web page editor. And our recommendation is for you, for most open source bloggers and podcasters and web page designers that might want to have something that is cross-platform, that is open source, that gives you full control and support for HTML5 as well as CSS, and are looking for something that is currently actively supported, that Blue Griffin would probably be our first choice for most people. And we really like the Maker for our particular situation, and you might like it as well. So give it a try if you like. And especially if you do most of your web development on Mac OS X, the Maker might give you some additional advantages that are in the OS X version that haven't yet made it to the Linux and the Windows versions. Our next episode will be listener feedback. Bill will be back. And until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com, the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done. If you want to support our efforts, please click the donate button while you're there on our brand new site. You can download the episodes directly from our website, or you can play them right from the show notes page. Or better still, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com to learn how to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Send us your feedback. We'll play your audio files or voicemail messages on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. And our voicemail line is +1 904-468-7889. And something I didn't mention is that now that we're using the Maker, our website is adaptive. So if you're finding us on your tablet or on your mobile telephone, there is a button right there that you can click from on your phone that hopefully, let me know if it doesn't, will allow you to dial the number directly from there. That's a US number, by the way. And remember, You can leave your topic suggestions on our forums at forum.goinglinux.com, or you can participate in our Google Plus community. Just look for Going Linux Podcast, or click the button to our Google Plus community right there on our brand new website. Until next time, thanks for listening. Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.